Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Holly Ortiz. My bar number is 39240. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal in this matter.
I'll try and let you know when we get there.
Thank you, Your Honor. There are two issues on appeal before us today. The changes that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission made to the ALJ's initial decision, and then, of course, the commission's reversal of the ALJ's ultimate finding that the district did not retaliate against Mr. Bassat. I'm going to first talk about the changes to the finding of fact because they are what the commission used to support its reversal of the ultimate conclusion, and then I'll address the ultimate conclusion. In this case, the ALJ made 44 findings of fact supporting her ultimate conclusion. Of those 44 findings of fact, the commission took issue with four. They made changes to those four, and then based upon their changes and the addition of two other facts, they reversed her ultimate conclusion that there had been no retaliation. Significantly, the commission's alterations are not supported by substantial evidence in the record. They're credibility determinations, which are impermissible, or they are determinations regarding the weight to be given to the evidence. Again, impermissible to change the hearing officer's decisions. The first finding of fact, which was altered, was finding 24. This finding involved Patrick Sanchez, the principal's rationale for sending an email. The CCRD deleted the last sentence of this finding, which the in which the ALJ had said that the misunderstanding, that Mr. Sanchez's misunderstanding was merely a reflection of his misunderstanding of district policy, or his rationale for sending the email, excuse me.
So let me, how does your position square with the Lawley decision decided by the Colorado Supreme Court that involved the personnel board and historical facts versus ultimate facts?
Well, in this case, of course, the case stands for the proposition that a court upon review of a hearing officer's decision, the findings of evidentiary fact, which are facts based upon historical facts, are the province of the hearing officer. In this case, that would have been the ALJ. The ultimate fact or mixed conclusions of law and fact may be changed by the board. However, those changes have to be supported by substantial evidence in the record.
Ultimate conclusions of fact.
Correct. And the ultimate conclusion of fact, obviously, in this case, is retaliation. Again, it is permissible for the CCRD to change that. However, the CCRD has to base their change of the ultimate conclusion on the record, on substantial evidence, on the evidentiary facts that are in the record. In this case, there are no evidentiary facts supporting the reversal of the conclusion, and certainly no substantial evidence supporting the reversal of the ultimate conclusion, which is precisely why the CCRC had to go back and make changes to the ALJ's findings of fact, because those findings did not support the reversal of the ultimate conclusion. Finding 24, the email, the substantial evidence the CCRD cited for changing this fact was that Patrick Sanchez had been an administrator for 16 years, and that the email that he sent makes no mention of precautions about volunteers not being alone with kids. Significantly, the record reflects that Patrick Sanchez was not a DPS administrator for 16 years. In fact, he'd only worked for DPS for 3 years. There's no mention in the record anywhere that he'd ever encountered this type of highly unusual situation before, involving a substitute teacher who was a student teacher who was accused by another employee of masturbating in the parking lot. There's no evidence supporting that. There's no evidence that he would have any clear understanding of this policy, merely because in some district somewhere he'd been an administrator for 16 years.
Ms. Ortiz, if I could try and follow up on Judge Roman's question about historical findings of fact and ultimate findings of fact, and relating that specifically to the ALJ's deletion of the last sentence in finding 24, do you think that that sentence that was deleted contained historical findings or ultimate findings or both?
I think it contains both, Your Honor, which is why ultimately I think it turns on the credibility determination of the ALJ. However, the ALJ did add on to the end that there was no reflection of improper motive. It was just a misunderstanding, which gives us a mixed fact, which is why we're talking about substantial evidence. ultimately, is it a credibility determination? Sure it is. She determined that Patrick Sanchez's testimony was credible. Is there substantial evidence? Even if we're talking about a mixed fact, is there substantial evidence supporting it? No. So the ALJ loses, or the commission can't change this on either basis, evidentiary fact or mixed fact. Their second rationale for changing this finding of fact was that the email makes no mention. Patrick Sanchez had testified that his chain of thought was that volunteers were never alone with kids. The email doesn't mention this, and that's the second rationale the commission uses. There's no reason why the email would mention that. He testified it was his chain of thought. It was not a requirement that he put it in there. There was no reason for him to explain his chain of thought in that email. That's not substantial evidence supporting the change to finding 24.
And so based on Lolly, is the finding of intentional retaliation an ultimate conclusion of fact?
I'm sorry, I guess I don't understand your
based
question.
On, well, they say in Lolly, and obviously that's the case that I'm sort of I'm trying to wrestle with here. They say, accordingly, we hold that a finding of intentional discrimination and a finding of arbitrary and capricious action are ultimate conclusions of fact. This is a retaliation case at this juncture. So my question to you is a finding of intentional retaliation an ultimate conclusion of fact?
Yes. Yes, it is, Your Honor. But again, that ultimate conclusion of fact has to be based on the record, on the historical facts in the record. We don't have that here. There's no support for that ultimate conclusion. Finding 31 is the next finding the commission changed. The commission admitted in their decision that this was finding of evidentiary fact. They changed it claiming that the finding was against the weight, or the ALJ's finding was against the weight of the evidence. This finding of fact dealt with Mr. Sanchez's basing his termination decision on his belief that it was more likely than not that Mr. Bassat had been masturbating in the parking lot. The ALJ went on to cite the evidence that Mr. Sanchez considered, saying that he considered the oral and written statements of Ms. Himes, the oral and written statements of police officer Damien, surveillance video, the admissions of Mr. Bassat. The commission deleted all that and said that they inserted the word asserts. Mr. Sanchez asserts he based. That's an impermissible credibility determination. Mr. Bassat based his termination on his belief. That is absolutely a credibility determination, and it was not contrary to the weight of the evidence. In fact, the ALJ cited the evidence. Then the commission went on to delete the evidence she considered. There's no basis for deleting any of that evidence. It's in the record. And then enumerated a list of evidence that they felt perhaps that Mr. Sanchez should have considered, including this line of sight, the record. They said that Sanchez didn't consider the records of both Iams and Bassat. That's contrary to the weight of the evidence. The evidence shows, the record shows that he did in fact consider the background information of Ms. Himes, and that there was very little, minimal background information for Mr. Bassat. Then the CCRC makes a significant determination that there was insufficient evidence to determine whether Sanchez spoke with Himes. They go on later in the decision to contradict themselves, and we'll come back to that in a few minutes.
Ms. Ortiz, what about the item you just mentioned about the line of sight? Was there evidence regarding that issue?
Yes, the evidence in the record is that Mr. Sanchez thought that Officer Damien had investigated. He believed he investigated. In fact, in their brief, the commission's brief, they admit that Patrick Sanchez believed that had been investigated. Furthermore, the fact that Ms. Himes accurately described Mr. Bassat, his reclined position in the car, indicates obviously she did have a line of sight into the car. Did Patrick Sanchez do additional investigation into the line of sight? No. Does that show that he didn't believe? No. In fact, they admit that he believed that had been investigated.
Well, one of the differences between the Civil Rights Commission and the ALJ on this point was whether or not Mr. Sanchez considered all the evidence available to him. So how do we determine, or how is it to be determined whether that whether Mr. Sanchez in fact considered all the evidence available to him.
Well, if you look at the record, the evidence, and a significant word in this is available, the commission lists a whole bunch of evidence, and there's no evidence in the record, or a whole bunch of evidence they think he should have considered, but there's no evidence in the record that any of it was available to him. In fact, the record reflects that the evidence that was available, he did consider, which includes the oral and written statements. The CCRC makes a big deal about that. He never spoke to Ms. Imes, so this finding that he spoke to Ms. Imes is wrong. That's not what the ALJ found. She found that he considered the oral statements. It's undisputed that Ms. Imes made oral statements to Officer Damien, to her colleague, to safety and security, to a number of people. It's undisputed that Patrick Sanchez discussed those oral statements with a number of people. So absolutely, did he consider her oral statements? He certainly did. Did he consider the oral statements of Officer Damien, a Denver police officer who was not an employee of the district? Yes, he did. And in fact, Officer Damien told him, you know what? I think she's credible. I don't think he is. I think he did it. Significant evidence that he considered. So this deletion of all this evidence, it's clear in the record. It's not contrary to the weight of the evidence, and it's not supported by substantial evidence in the record. Your Honor, I see I have about three and a half minutes left. I think I'll save the rest for rebuttal at this point.
Okay, very well. Thanks, Ms. Ortiz. Excuse me, before you begin, I noticed there are two counsel for the opposing side. Are you intending to divide your time in a particular way?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm Michael Scott, counsel for the commission, and we're going to divide it essentially in half. About 7 minutes apiece.
Okay. Would you like me to indicate when you, there are 7 minutes left
or 8 minutes left? So kind.
Okay, sure.
May it please the court. As I mentioned, I'm Assistant Attorney General Michael Scott. My registration number is 36692, and I represent the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. The issue before the court today is whether the commission abused its discretion in determining that the district terminated Mr. Bassat in retaliation for engaging in protected conduct. Now, I'm not going to go through the facts as Ms. Ortiz did, except to explain that the briefs detail the facts, and those facts that the commission changed were supported by substantial evidence in the record. It really comes down to an analysis of what each party, each witness said during their testimony. And if you look at those briefs, it breaks down the actual testimony. But as Ms. Ortiz mentioned, in reaching its conclusion, the commission modified several findings of fact, and also the two ultimate conclusions that one, Mr. Bassat had proven a prima facie case of retaliation, and two, that the reasons proffered by the district were pretext. Now, this court reviews the decision of the commission under a abuse of discretion standard. And what that standard means is that the court should only reverse the decision of the commission if the commission acted arbitrarily or capriciously, made a decision that was unsupported by the record, erroneously interpreted the law, or exceeded its authority.
Mr. Scott, I guess I'm having a hard time understanding the connection between the commission's criticism of the investigation and how it relates to retaliation. I mean, I can see if the claim were just simple discrimination, you could argue that they weren't doing an adequate investigation because of, you know, racial reasons. But because the investigation occurred before the act, the assertion of civil rights that arguably led to the retaliation, I'm having a difficult time understanding what the causal connection is.
Well, in the findings of fact, you'll see that the investigation, there's essentially two pieces to the investigation. There's the police investigation that found that the allegations were not founded and didn't result in a criminal prosecution. And then there was, and after that, Mr. Sanchez released Mr. Bassat to return to work in good standing, saying the allegations were not founded. Then you have a period of time before Mr. Bassat was called into Mr. Sanchez's office where no investigation occurred. during that period of time, Mr. Sanchez didn't interview Ms. Iams. He didn't investigate the line of sight issue. He didn't investigate Mr. Bassad's credibility. He essentially just sat on it and did nothing. Then you had a meeting where Mr. Bassad then made the allegation that this was discriminatory. It was because of his national origin. And then the day after, you have the termination. So the causation comes from the protected activity during that September 26 meeting and then the termination on the 27th.
If you construe that email as being something other than releasing him to come back to employment, does that affect that argument?
No, it doesn't. The email is essentially, since there were no notes of any investigation, the email is the, it would be the contemporaneous belief of Mr. Sanchez. It's, you're all clear, the allegations are not founded. Between that, there's no other information as to what Mr. Sanchez's beliefs actually were at the time, at least nothing contemporaneous. And so then you have the protected conduct, and you have the one-day difference, which is sufficient temporal proximity to establish the causation.
It still sounds to me like you're accepting that email as some belief that Mr. Bassad had been cleared, but if you accept the alternative view that it was just a misunderstanding of the district policies, then it seems like the rest of your argument doesn't fall into place.
Well, even if it was a misunderstanding of the district policies, Mr. Sanchez had the opportunity to conduct an investigation. I mean, he could have interviewed the witnesses. He could have reviewed the line of sight issue, which Officer Damien thought would have been a good idea. But the fact was that he didn't. And Mr. Sanchez himself testified that that he believed that every employee, whether they're a student teacher, whether they're a substitute teacher, they're all entitled to due process and an adequate investigation. Well, that was essentially Mr. Sanchez's own personal policy or practice, as he testified. And he did not conduct an adequate or fair investigation.
And so was that finding that you're talking to, that you're talking with my colleague about, by the ALJ, was that a historical or evidentiary fact where the ALJ said, I've heard the evidence and I conclude that he was confused about the district policy? Is that a historical evidentiary fact that we would give credibility to?
As far as, if I'm understanding your question correctly, was the conclusion about his whether or not he understood the policy, was that an ultimate conclusion or evidentiary fact?
Yeah.
Well, the commission determined it was an ultimate conclusion of fact, that it was a mixed question of law and fact.
And this whole credibility issue, I guess, is a little tricky to me in this case. The ALJ was the one who was sitting there watching the demeanor of the witness and concluded essentially it was kind of sloppy, he was wrong, but she ultimately concludes, but it wasn't retaliatory. And ultimately, you have to prove it's retaliation. Why doesn't she give him credit for that credibility determination?
Well, in the way the ALJ reviewed the I wouldn't go so far as to call it a credibility determination, because basically she looked at his testimony and she said, well, there was confusion, he didn't really remember the meetings, she couldn't pinpoint to a meeting that actually occurred. But if you take the testimony of the district's other witnesses, Ms. Iams, Mr. Mueller, and even Officer Damien, they all speak of different meetings. They all, none of them actually line up. So I wouldn't call it a credibility determination, because you'd be using the credibility of the district's own witnesses against each other. And she didn't do that. She didn't say, well, Ms. Iams was wrong and Mr. Sanchez was right. It was well, the evidence that the ALJ looked at, she believed that these meetings had occurred. But when you look at the record as a whole, you see that the testimony concerning the meetings conflicts. And in that way, the commission was able to look at based on substantial evidence and determine that the meetings didn't actually occur.
Excuse me, Mr. Scott, you have about 7 minutes and 40 seconds.
Okay, Your Honor, I'll turn it over to Mr. Fawn.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court. Richard LaFawn, registration number 5429. representing the complaint and intervener, Mr. Bassat. The commission did exactly what it was supposed to do under CRS 244-105-15B. They made a final decision in conformity with the facts and the law. There's been a lot of discussion here about credibility. Because of the framework of a title, of a discrimination case, the credibility here is not going to a particular witness or witness A versus witness B. The credibility question here goes to the issue of pretext. In other words, considering all the evidence as a whole, is it reasonable, is it credible to believe that Mr. Sanchez believed that Mr. Bassat was masturbating in the parking lot? Surely a career ender as it has been.
So if I understand you correctly, Mr. LaFond, your view is that all of the ALJ's credibility determinations really concern ultimate issues of fact rather than historical issues of fact.
Yes.
Is there any case law that supports that position?
Well, borrowing the Colorado anti-discrimination, of course, is kind of modeled after Title VII and uses the federal case law quite abundantly. If I can point the court to Argo versus Blue Cross Blue Shield of Kansas, 452 Fed 3rd, 1193, 10th Circuit, 2006. 10th Circuit held to establish pretext, complainant must present evidence of such weaknesses, implausibilities, inconsistencies, incoherencies, or contradictions in the employer's proffered legitimate reasons for its action that a reasonable fact finder rationally found that would find them unworthy of credence. In other words, when you take all of the facts together, and if I may, just for a minute, let me concentrate on some of those facts, and it's really the top six. The Colorado Civil Rights Division found that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission found that the articulated non-discriminatory reason by the school district had no basis in fact, was not the actual reasons, and was insufficient to explain the actions taken. Here, there was no due process investigation after the email was received. So once the email is received, he can return back to school. There is no more investigation until his termination. The determination that Ms. Imes was more credible without even speaking to her. I would point the court to Mr. Sanchez's testimony that he had a conference call with he, Ms. Imes, and Mr. Muller. And what they discussed here was the line of sight. What they discussed was whether there was other witnesses and the scar that Mr. Bassat had. Both Ms. Imes and Mr. Muller testified that conversation never happened. The interesting part was that those were exactly the things that should have been investigated, and Mr. Sanchez comes up with apparently incredible and unbelievable testimony. The determination, quite honestly, that Mr. Bassat was lying without any investigation, without attempting to look into his background whatsoever. This man was a sergeant major for 30 years. He was in the Army for 30 years, came out as a sergeant major, had an incredible background. He had a top secret security clearance. They could have talked to his teacher assigned to him at West High School, Mr. Dominguez. They could have talked to his student advisor at
Mr. LaFond, let me interrupt you because I want to get back to the legal framework here.
Sure.
All right. So assuming we have a prima facie case established in pretext, going back to, as you say, the federal cases, which the CCRC case law often looks at, if that went to a jury, that would be a jury determination of whether the pretext was a pretext for discrimination or not, correct?
That's correct.
And if we had a district court judge, I think that would be the district court judge's determination as to whether or not the pretext equaled, in that case, retaliation or not.
Right.
But really then, the framework here turns on this procedural posture. We have an ALJ, but we have a commission also. And the ALJ is working on behalf of the commission. So is it your position that when you get to the prima facie case plus pretext, it's not the ALJ who has the ultimate determination of retaliation, it's the commission who the ALJ is working on behalf of.
Well, I think, you know, the very caption of what they're doing, the hearing officer has an initial decision. If that gets appealed, the very duty is to take a look at those findings, including the ultimate finding, to come out with the final decision. So I think they did exactly what they're supposed to do, if that is responsive.
That is the...
All right. Let me just for a second on this email about not returning to school. I'm sorry, the email telling Mr. Bassat that the allegations had been found not founded and asking him to return to school. Mr. Sanchez testifies he never did return to school. His whole, which is taking the record as a whole, is obviously not correct. There is no mention of any kind of restrictions that Mr. Bassat came up with, that Mr. Bassat, because of this allegation, should not be alone with students. Another one here is Mr. Bassat's offer to take a polygraph examination without getting into the whole whether or not this is admissible proof. The question is, was that reasonable given this situation? In other words, to deny this man the one possibility he had to show that he was telling the truth.
Mr. LaFonson, shall we have a minute left? I want to get this question in really fast. Could you address the back pay benefits and the subtraction of the salary that was earned after? I think it was like $50,000 a year salary.
Really, as far as I understand the law, what should be awarded here is what Mr. Bassat lost during that very short time frame that he was there as a student teacher. He was not paid as a student teacher, but that would have been the time period that he also could have served as a substitute teacher. That is the proper amount of back pay. Your Honor, with all due respect, if this case does not constitute an establishing pretext, I have no idea what a pretext case would look like. If essentially the evidence shows that the articulated non-discriminatory reason is not the actual reason, it is insufficient to explain the action taken, and it has no basis in fact, I would respectfully suggest chances are that's a case of pretext. And much like the duck, if this isn't it, I don't know what it would be.
Mr. LaFond, your time is up. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I want to jump right to the ultimate conclusion in this. Something highly significant in this. The whole focus of the commission in this has been the investigation, but as you pointed out earlier, the investigation occurred prior to the protected activity. Therefore, the investigation part of this is not evidence of retaliation. You can't retaliate before the protected activity took place. The uncontested, the undisputed testimony at hearing was that Mr. Bassat said, Ms. Iams' description of me, not your description, Mr. Sanchez, not your description, school district, Ms. Iams' description of me is racial profiling. And the uncontested testimony is that he said that because he believed they had made the decision, that they believed her, they didn't believe him, and his job was on the line. That's kind of the end of the story.
But the investigation was complete by then.
That would be the investigation was complete by then. We had statements written in oral from all the relevant parties. We had a chance for Mr. Bassat to come in to view the videotape, which confirmed Ms. Iams' story in every way that it could. We have Mr. Sanchez saying, you know, do you have any explanation? Is that you? He admits it's him. He admits he's in the car. He admits he's reclined. All of that occurs prior to the protective activity. The prima facie case, the commission stops its analysis at the temporal proximity, but the case law says that the analysis doesn't stop there. It is well-founded case law that an employer is not required to suspend adverse activity that it was already contemplating merely because an employee cries discrimination. That's what happened in this case. In fact, that's why he was at the meeting. They were contemplating terminating his employment as a substitute teacher because of these accusations. He makes the decision, you know what, they've already determined I did it, they've already decided to believe her. That's when he complains of discrimination. In this case, there is no prima facie case. The district was not required not to terminate him merely because he complained that a witness, not even the decision maker, but a witness in this case's description of him was racial profiling and discriminatory. It's also significant that our decision maker in this is a Hispanic male who's a Latino rights advocate who founded the Mentoring Institute for Latino Educators. It's nonsensical that this man would retaliate for complaining of discrimination. He's obviously spent a great deal of time fighting that very issue. We have a police officer here who also made a credibility determination. Again, all of this happens prior to the protected activity. Again, you can't retaliate before the protected activity has taken place. As far as pretext, there is no substantial evidence in this record of pretext. Opposing counsel makes much of the confusion of Mr. Sanchez. However, that's a credibility determination made by the ALJ, the finder of fact, the only finder of fact in this who actually saw the testimony of the witnesses. And she determined it was just that, confusion. That's a credibility determination that the CCRC is not permitted to overturn. There has been an abuse of discretion, and the CCRC's findings in this are not supported by the record. Therefore, they must be reversed.
The time is up. Thank you, Ms. Ortiz. Thank you again to all counsel for your arguments this morning. We really do appreciate them. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.